How's it going? And welcome to episode 259 of On the Wire, a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening and or watching on this. Let's get this out of the way. Kevin, happy Father's Day to you and anybody else in your life that's also a father, and everybody else listening that's also a father. So hopefully you got good plans for tomorrow, or no plans at all. Sometimes those are the best ones.
Yeah. Leaning towards the no plans at all side of things. I'm sure we'll be hanging out, my wife, daughter, and I, doing some things. But as I was telling you before we started recording, great thing about the time zone I am in is I'll be watching baseball in the final round at the U.S. Open before they even get out of bed. So I'll be off to a good start. Happy Father's Day to you.
Breakfast in bed, not necessary. Just leave me alone while I wake up early and watch baseball and golf.
There you go.
Awesome. Cool. We are going on a road trip next week. So it's like this, the weekend prior is always like the only time you have to actually do any kind of prep or anything like that. So Whatever ends up happening happens. More than likely it'll end up being some kind of version of spring cleaning / got my earbuds in, maybe I mow the lawn, because honestly I'm perfectly happy just spending my Father's Day mowing the lawn, which is a weird thing to say, but it's just your time out there. At least it is for me.
Absolutely.
I wasn't going to put this in the news, but it is timely. Shohei Ohtani went on the paternity list, so happy Father's Day to him. That seems good timing on that part. But there's going to be
absolutely. I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the show, Adam. With me being a tour guide here on the island, I pick up at the hotel and the resort that Shohei Ohtani has a home in on a regular basis, and I'm just waiting.
Yeah,
one of these days, Shohei is going to step onto the van.
Yeah, and then with his kid.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
so well, yeah, you'll definitely have to let us know when that day arrives. And if for whatever reason you're missing a show because there's some reason that nobody knows, now we all have to just assume it's because you got.
I'm hanging out with Shohei.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, obviously. All right. Well, we got to get into not as much. I say this every once in a while, but I think it's true this time. Not as much news, not as much fab-related news to go over today. So maybe we can go through a little bit of a lightning round and spend some more time on the ones that matter the most. One that probably doesn't make that much of an impact, assuming he gets through it as quickly as the time allotted would assume, is Adley Rutschman. He was officially placed on the 7-day concussion IL after being hit the other day and missing Friday and then Saturday. Saturday, he officially hit the IL there. So we will see him out of the Baltimore lineup, at least probably through this coming week, at least through the first half of the week in your NFBC formats. Anything to kind of take away from this situation with Rutschman out for, you know, the next week or so?
Nah, Basalo would have been in the lineup anyway, maybe another day or two behind the plate, actually, which would give Sam Huff, is probably going to get another extra day or two behind the plate, but we don't care about that. So yeah, there's nothing here.
Man, I remember Sam Huff was like one of the like secret
in Texas catchers. Organization. Yes. He was pretty highly thought of.
Yeah. And then there was one season where he was being drafted without catcher eligibility.
Yeah.
It was like the secret catcher. I'm glad to just hear his name again. Let's stay in the AL East and go up to Toronto. A bunch of stuff happened throughout the course of the week. First and foremost, happening next week, Shane Bieber is expected to start on Monday for Toronto, making his return. And then earlier in the week, Max Scherzer will return at some other point because he's on the IL now with back spasms. And then just today, the Blue Jays added a bat in Luis Urias from the Arizona Diamondbacks. So with all this, at least from the rotation standpoint, just because of the timing, Scherzer out, Bieber expected to be back in, that seems to be a one for one. what role does Urias have in this? We've seen Toronto kind of do this throughout the course of the season, just kind of bring in guys that either been DFA'd as filler or what have you. Do you expect Urias to have any kind of impact for the on the Blue Jays lineup?
Maybe, because we hadn't seen Lennon Sosa get playing time that many of us hoped he might get. Mm-hmm. He was pretty darn good, especially versus lefties for the Chicago White Sox last year. We've been waiting on Barger all season to come back. Right. We keep hearing that's soon. And now we're almost halfway through the season. And now Ernie Clement has missed games both Friday and Saturday now as we're recording. So I think this is a lot of depth. And even though we're recording on Saturday evening, we still have to pay attention to this the rest of the weekend. Specifically, are we going to see Ernie Clement back right away at the beginning of this week? If we do, I don't think there's much here. If we don't, then Urias might find his way into some playing time. Davis Snyder a little more as well.
Yeah, it seems like that would have been like the only reason to make this move on the Blue Jays' part if they weren't worried about that and they don't trust to bring up anybody else up to kind of fill that Clement gap. So based on this single move alone, I won't be surprised to see Clement either hit the IL or at least have, you know, five or six more days.
Yep.
So make sure you're looking at that situation, especially.
Yeah, because Clement's been sneaky good in a lot of my lineups.
It was one of those things where it's like he was out for Friday and Saturday. It was a little too late to get him pulled out.
Yeah.
Like, is he going to miss all weekend? No. I have Clement in my lineups, I need him.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the best way to put it right there.
All right. Like I said, they brought in Luis Urias from Arizona. Arizona had a lot going on as well. On top of that, with earlier in the week, Ryan Nelson was a torn flexor. I think also a UCL. That whole area of his body not doing well, but not looking for surgery at the moment. Just going to have an additional MRI in about a month and a half, and then kind of see where it goes. He's hopeful he'll be back sometime in September. So going to do the wait and see approach, I guess, at this point. Before we get into anything else, do you expect the wait and see approach to work out for him, or are you just, you know, cutting bait? No, I mean, even if you do think it's going to work out, we're talking, he says he's hoping he'll be back in early September. That doesn't seem like something worth holding on to.
Exactly.
Well, they also lose out on starter Michael Soroka. He hits the IL with a strained glute or hip discomfort was originally. And then when they officially put him on the IL, it was listed as a strained glute. Any insight into this situation in just the lineup, the rotation as a whole for the Diamondbacks?
Well, it looks like, other than guys we have seen before, Brandon Pfaadt and guys that we're going to see, but it does appear that they are going to need the services of Jose Cabrera. And he's somewhat intriguing, kind of a mixed bag throughout his career in the minor leagues. Not huge strikeout numbers, but he was about a strikeout per inning guy. In the minors, has gotten the walks down in the minors over the past couple of seasons, 2025 and 2026. And he had three starts at AAA most recently with just under a 4 ERA in Arizona's system. It looks like we're going to see him, and he will probably have his major league debut versus the... Oh, I had it pulled up here. There it is. We're probably going to see him on Sunday versus Minnesota. So he won't even be available for us until next week, but he's probably the addition here. And then we'll see him next weekend versus Tampa as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a couple of games to go on in non-NFBC formats with that Sunday start against Minnesota and then probably at Tampa next weekend. I might take a stab here. And then FBC will have a couple of games to go on.
Right, exactly. Especially you get that early start next week. Assuming that they probably move Ryan Nelson to the 60-day IL to make room, because Cabrera is not currently on the 40-man roster, from what I can tell. It should seem like an obvious move there, just to make to make room there.
Exactly.
But yeah, like you said, Fott being the obvious one to kind of jump in, because they're out not only Soroka and obviously now in Nelson, but Corbin Burns is not on his way back anytime soon as well. So they've got, you know, three starters right now.
If Cabrera does indeed go on Sunday, which we fully expect, then we'd be looking at this week, Merrill Kelly, E-Rod, Brandon Fott, Zach Gallen, mm-hmm. back to Cabrera.
All right. Well, looking forward to seeing what Arizona ends up doing here, and maybe what we can glean from it throughout the course of the next week. The other piece of news out of Arizona, which is, I'm not trying to bury the lead here. Jordan Lawler, he hits the IL with a hamstring strain. And I mean, this guy cannot catch a break as far as playing time versus injury versus getting called down, whatever. What impact is his absence going to have on Arizona's lineup moving forward?
Well, we're probably going to see Tommy Troy get his plate appearances back versus lefties. He had sat three of the last four. We might see him back in there, and we're going to see Lourdes Gurriel not get that day off. It appeared Barossa did get the start on Saturday, and he was getting about a start a week. Maybe he gets a couple now. It'll be spread out, it appears.
Yeah, Lawler just, like I said, just couldn't catch a break. He finally gets back from the IL. Started pretty much every single day out in center field. Lefties, righties. I mean, they face a lot of lefties too. I didn't see an expected timeline on when he might come in. I didn't see what grade the strain was for Lawler, but man, with his history, hopefully he takes it easy. So he can come back at 100%.
Other than Barossa, I don't see one. I don't see anyone on the roster that has played center field for Arizona this season. So it may be a lot of Barossa, or we're going to see a move here as well.
Sure. Tim Tawa was a corresponding move to take his place in the roster, but obviously not a center fielder. Before getting sent down, he was playing a little bit of left field, but I don't expect that we'll see him in the middle of the.
Yeah, if we don't see a move on Sunday, Barossa might be intriguing.
Hey, playing time is playing time, regardless. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, so staying in the National League, Atlanta makes an interesting move, only because they've had this rotation of catcher, unfortunately, for pretty much the entire season. They acquired Joey Bart from Pittsburgh. Joey Bart had been on a rehab stint while being on the IL for the Pirates, and as soon as they acquire him, Atlanta reinstated him from the IL, so he should be available for Atlanta, and he was today. He started at catcher, batting eighth for the Braves against a lefty. But I mean, is he slotted right into being not an everyday catcher? Obviously, nobody is. But like, is he with Drake Baldwin back as well? Is Bart just the obvious second catcher here in this situation?
Yeah, and I this is just, you know, Atlanta knew that Sandy Leon hadn't hit 200 since 2017, but he would hit above 100 until the past two seasons now. So this is, yeah, they upgraded their C2.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah. Sandy Leon DFA'd to make room for Joey Bart. It was just, yeah. So we got Joey Bart, like I said, starting on Saturday, batting eighth. Drake Baldwin back, batting every single day, alternating between catcher and DH for Atlanta, and we'll continue to see that for the foreseeable future. So fan of Joey Bart, glad to see him in a position where, you know, if Baldwin is going to get plenty of DH time, it could still, you know, spell plenty of playing time for Bart at the catcher position.
Bart can affect this. Sandy Leone was getting 2 to 3 starts behind the plate a week. So they have room in the hitting lineup to have a catcher other than Drake Baldwin, and Drake Baldwin at DH in that lineup. So Bart can play into more playing time as well, I would think.
Yeah, and in the recent, just recently, just looking at their history of their lineup, Austin Wynn had been in there as well, pretty much alternating with Sandy Leone, while Baldwin was still on the IL. And as soon as Baldwin came off the IL, Wynn was DFA'd, and he is currently still a free agent out there. So, yeah, this is just a rotation of...
Yeah, Bart now has the spot that two guys were taking up there for a little bit with Baldwin out, and Baldwin DH many times, like you were saying. Yeah, exactly. There's room here.
All right. Well, speaking of catchers, the Cubs made an interesting demotion with optioning Moises Ballesteros to AAA. Along the other interesting demotion came earlier in the week with Philadelphia demoting one of their rotation pieces in Andrew Painter. Which one of these, well, let's see, which one of these impacts you the most? Do you roster either one of these guys anywhere?
No, I do not. However, I have been intrigued by what Michael Conforto has done this season in his limited number of plate appearances versus right-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. And every time I think he's going to get a little more of that playing time, they were giving it to Ballesteros. Mm-hmm. So that's my hope. Maybe we see that. It doesn't have to. I mean, many times neither one of these guys were in their lineup, and so it doesn't have to be that, but that is my hope. There is, I hope that we, as long as he does continue to produce as he has when playing this year, I'd like to see what Conforto can do here.
Yeah, he just has not been given pretty much any opportunity to get on a run. I think he's only started 3 games in a row 3 times throughout the course of the season.
And back there at the end of May when he had those 4 starts, that's when he was playing well at that time, and they just, let's let Ballesteros have these at-bats.
Yeah.
Just like, and that's when Ballesteros was struggling. I didn't get it, but maybe that's what this is.
Yeah, well, he's obviously struggling enough at the moment to go work on some stuff in AAA. Painter, are you going to be, if he goes back down, he works on whatever he needs to work on, and he shows what he had shown in the past while being in the minors as he was working his way into the majors, are you going to be interested to jump back in, especially with our current state of affairs when it comes to who's available right now to actually pick up for starting pitching?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's still 23 years old. We probably still have high expectations, although we haven't seen nearly what we were hoping we would see yet. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how many starts it's going to take for the Phillies to feel confident about bringing him back up, or it's going to obviously take another, an injury, God forbid, for somebody else. All right, so we've got a couple more pieces of news. Not that much, but you know what? Enough where we need to take our first break. All right, this one's kind of a big one, Kevin, only because it's just extremely disappointing in the timing. Mike Trout hits the IL with a hamstring injury as he tries to make his way back and possibly even get like comeback player of the year for the American League and possibly even make the all-star team for the Angels, but he'll have a harder time doing that while on the IL. Christian Moore takes his place on the active roster. Earlier in the week, Vaughn Grissom also hit the IL, so he'll be joining Trout side by side. Vaughn Grissom came back from the IL, so Trout takes his place on that roster. Trey Mancini being the unfortunate DFA to make room for Grissom. So overall, all the moving parts in the Angels lineup, which one has got you paying the most attention?
Well, I'm really intrigued about some of the playing time from the middle to the bottom of the order. We've been seeing Donovan Walton play versus every single right-handed pitcher for the past couple of weeks. Denzer Guzman versus righties and lefties. This is where it gets intriguing to me. We've only had one game versus a right-handed starting pitcher since Mike Trout went down with this injury. It's not a surprise that Jose Siri got the starts versus the lefties. I was a bit surprised that Jose Siri is in the lineup on Sunday. And then I started looking very similarly to the what we were just talking about with Arizona's lineup. I don't see anyone on this roster other than Jose Siri currently that has played center field this season. Now I don't know if we want Jose Siri in our lineup hitting versus righties. The batting average could be absolutely atrocious, but it does appear as of right now that Jose Siri is going to get playing time here.
Yeah. I mean, it's like apples to apples situation from what we were talking about earlier. They got nobody, obviously, with Trout taking most of the time in center field when he wasn't DHing, not being an option any longer. Christian Moore did start in left field, but also started at DH. I doubt Christian Moore is your center fielder, even in a short period of time. Wade Meckler playing left field, and Joe Adell.
And we won't see Christian Moore this week. To make this even more fun, they're facing a righty every day this week. So we wouldn't have seen Siri typically. How many out of six games do we see him?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't see Christian Moore in that situation either. So it's right. Like, we'll see. Yeah, I guess Siri really is the only option here. Interesting, especially if you, I mean, he's not batting poorly either, whether or not he does well against a bunch of righties as opposed to his lefty specialist. We'll see if that works itself out. But again, volume speaks louder than words. And we'll see if we can get some kind of speed out of Siri, even at the bottom of the lineup. So if you're desperate for speed, if you weren't going to bring him up already, Kevin, Jose Siri's got to be somebody to at least take a look at later on. The Mets are going to get back Francisco Lindor at some point because he is officially starting a rehab assignment this weekend. When Lindor does come back, whenever that ends up being, God forbid he hits a snag or anything like that, he just comes back within a couple, you know, within the next 5 or 6 days or even earlier, what kind of impact is his presence going to have on the current state of affairs with the Mets lineup?
Yeah, I think it's going to shuffle some things. It's going to mean that Bo Bichette can go back to third base on a regular basis, which means we probably see even less Mark Vientos. We have only seen him versus lefties for his last three appearances. Mm-hmm. His playing time could be in trouble here. Zach Short probably gets sent down. I would think he was only here to play shortstop versus lefties for the couple of games that we have seen him Wednesday and Saturday. This is going to be nice for the Mets and for many fantasy players. I need Lindor badly in a couple of spots. I think for the most part, we'll continue to see that top, you know, six with Lindor stuck in there, and then a combination of Beatty, Melendez, Alvarez, and or Torrens probably don't play on the same day as often. Vientos, those guys are all going to lose a few
at-bats. Yeah, I guess I'm worried about Jared Young a little bit. I mean, he'd been playing first base against righties, that strong side, opposite of Vientos, who's had the short stick, that, as you mentioned. But if Beatty, also working the strong side at third base, gets moved from Bichette moving back over, got to assume Beatty takes a lot of that first base responsibility.
But I would think Jared Young gets the at-bats over Melendez, who has been the DH in that situation.
Fair.
Hopefully. I got a lot of Jared Young, too.
Yeah, especially once he returned from the IL, getting called up, and he's been playing pretty much every single day. Or at least this.
Yeah, I would say
a lot of righties. So
I'd say Melendez loses out on a lot of at-bats here.
All right. Well, hopefully that seems to be the case. And, you know, Young keeps his, at the very least, the strong side of the platoon. I guess it also depends on who the Mets are playing or who they're set to face next week, on whether or not there is even the opportunity of facing off against a bunch of righties.
Yep, 6 out of 7.
There we go. All right. So all those guys, hopefully they at least keep their playing time between Beatty and Young with the strong side of the platoon next week. And we don't know when Lindor is going to come back anyway. So this, I mean, could happen at the very end of next week. Could happen on Tuesday if everything looks perfect. We'll see. The last thing of note here is in Cleveland. Earlier in the week, Cleveland officially threw Chase DeLauder on the IL with a rib fracture, retroactive to June 14th. But it's a rib fracture. It's not as though they were retroactively putting that on there because they thought he would get back within the minimum time frame, or at least I doubt they were or are. But with DeLauder officially on the IL now and not having to like worry about what exactly what was going on, because when he was first injured, there wasn't a lot of news and notes about what it actually it was. Now we know for sure he's out. He's been out for a little bit. What impact is that having on Cleveland's lineup? And what are you doing with DeLauder?
Yeah, so Cleveland's got a lot of changes, and it was all last weekend into early this week. So some of this we may have discussed briefly, but as of Sunday, Chase DeLauder, Jose Ramirez, and Angel Martinez have not been in Cleveland's lineup. Now they all three are now on the IL, going on the IL at different. I think they went on 3 consecutive days. First J Ram, then Martinez, then DeLauder. And what we have seen is, for the most part, 4 out of 6 of the games that Jose Ramirez has not been the third baseman, it has been Gabriel Arias, who came back off of the IL himself. So that one helped. He came back at the same time anyway. We saw Khalil Watson get a majority of the starts that DeLauder had gotten in right field since he was called up on Wednesday. And we have seen Stephen Kwan get the starts versus righties, and David Fry versus lefties that Martinez had given up, and them shuffle things around a little bit. And over the past 3 or 4 days, that's what has stood. So that's what it appears is going to be what we're going to see here. Gabriel Arias, who we would have expected to get back into the lineup most days anyway, that is happening. Mm-hmm. Watson, and then the combination of Kwan and Fry with a little bit of Stuart Fairchild mixed in there, playing center field versus lefties right now for Cleveland. This week they will see 5 out of 6 righties. So, yeah, we're going to see Watson and Arias, and probably a little bit, a little more Stephen Kwan, maybe not sit quite as much this week.
Yeah, a lot happening all at the same time in Cleveland, as
but you they mentioned. Pretty much just did a 3 for 3.
Sure.
Making, I mean, it, that's really nice. Easy on us. Yeah.
For planning purposes.
Yeah. exactly.
A lot of moving pieces still, though, for the Cleveland to kind of figure all that out all at the same time. I left this out, and I don't know why, but because you're talking about all these changes because of injury to one team, I got to bring up your Royals. Because, as you mentioned, Jose Ramirez went out, and, of course, that was with a hammy injury. He went and had surgery pretty much, like, the next day. And the other one of those was Vinny Pasquantino on the same day, also with a hamate injury, also went for surgery like right away as well. So hoping to get both of those guys back by the end of the year, I'm sure for their respective clubs. But with Pasquantino out for a long time for your Royals, obviously playing every single day at first base. And then later on in the week, starting to lose Michael Garcia due to injury ? Because he's not going on the IL or hasn't been placed on the IL yet, but he has missed the last three games, or at least Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They don't have a game on Saturday. Weird timing. There was a couple of weird off days this week, and this random Saturday being off for the Royals was one of them, at least throwing me off a little bit. Bobby Witt also out on Friday. He's still waiting to get some imaging, if I'm not mistaken. But catch me up on your Royals and what's going on injury-wise, and what should I be expecting out of their lineup through the rest of the weekend and into next week?
Well, I was a little surprised, not shocked, but a little surprised with Vinny Pasquantino's injury. They moved Jack Caglione to first base. Mm-hmm. And it does make sense, but it does lead me to believe that we probably don't see Vinny Pasquantino back this season if they just want to make that move right now. I think we see Jack Caglione as the close to everyday first baseman going forward here, because if it had been a shorter term thing with Vinny Pasquantino's injury, we probably would have seen just a few more Salvador Perez starts at first base, sure. Jack Caglione here and there, but not every day like we have seen. Mikel Garcia, this is kind of weird. He missed a couple of days the previous week with injury, and then pinch hit a day, and it was kind of, then he was back in the lineup most this week, and now he's out at the end of the week again. So this is somewhat worrisome. It's a hand injury. And then Bobby Witt Jr., I do expect to go on the IL. I was watching the game when that happened. We haven't gotten any news since. Everybody's trying to be optimistic, but they're saying sprained MCL, and I was watching the game as it happened and saw the look on his face when his knee stopped sliding and his body kept going. And I think he's going to miss some time. So what that means as of now, without them making moves, more time for Cameron Meisner in the outfield, especially versus righties, with Jack Caglione moving to the infield. More term for Nick Lofton on the infield versus righties. He was starting against every lefty prior. And then Tyler Tolbert, as of right now, I do expect there's probably a move if Bobby Witt Jr. is going to miss extended time. But if he's going to have a short-term IL stint or just miss a few days and avoid the IL, Tyler Tolbert will get the days at shortstop as he did on Friday.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And of course, Kyle Isbell also been placed on the IL about a week and a half ago, not expecting him back anytime soon to fill in that outfield gap as they move Caglione back into the infield as well. So, just a lot of moving parts. And I agree. I agree with your take on Caglione moving to first, Pasquantino going to take his time to come back, if at all. In that situation. But I also wonder if how much that has to do with just the fact that they just don't have or trust a lot of other outfield options. Or they just have other outfield options rather than somebody that they can throw into first base. But Caglione obviously came up both in the outfield and at first base. It's not as though he's never played the position before.
Right.
Well, it'd be nice to have that added eligibility for next year and for this year, because I don't think he, at least in NFBC, I don't think he had first base eligibility.
No.
And he won't. He started four. He just needs the 10, right? So he should get that in short order sometime next week, probably. All right. Well, a lot going on, especially on the hitter side of things, with a bunch of different teams and a bunch of players moving around, going on the IL, not quite sure if they're going on the IL or not. So you should be keeping track of all of those lineup changes and roster shifts. And of course, there's a whole bunch of other news that we didn't go over. Make sure you're listening to the First Pitch podcast every single day, where they go over all of the news and notes and break down all the highlights and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as look ahead to each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues throughout the summer. And of course, Nick Pollock's got you covered on the pitching front with the Plus Pitch podcast, right here, wherever you're listening to your podcast, but on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. You can listen to all the shows on one feed, or, you know, pick and choose the ones that have the most meaning to your leagues on their individual feeds as well. But we are going to get into our player recommendations, how you can use what little fab you might still have left, or how you can divvy up whatever you've been stashing. We're going to get to that right after this break. All right, Kevin, we need some power. Okay. Not so much me. Power is like that I focused on the most in my drafts. And in my Glarf draft, I was light years ahead of everybody in home runs. I was pretty high in RBI as well. And I blinked, and all of a sudden I'm still at the top, but I'm only like one or two home runs instead of like 15 home runs above the team in second place. So I'm not getting desperate yet in that category. But I am paying attention, and others in my league are as well. Who might they be targeting this week to try to catch up?
As long as they continue to face a predominantly right-handed starting pitchers, mm-hmm. and as long as Jock Peterson continues to hit leadoff versus those right-handed starting pitchers, for Texas, I'm going to be interested. He's still only 75% rostered in the NFBC main event, the 15-team leagues. And it's really low, like 8%, I think, something like that in 12-team leagues. 9% rostered in NFBC online championships. And he's right at 9 home runs, no stolen bases, right? 25 to 30 runs, 25 to 30 RBI. And guess what he's projected for the rest of the season? About 9 or 10 home runs, no stolen bases. And that he's doing exactly. He is who we thought he was, right? Jock Peterson. So going to continue to bring him up as long as he continues to have that availability.
Mm-hmm. Name that really popped out to me, it's funny because we talked about him last week because he came back from the IL and didn't really start any games. But literally as of Monday, when after everybody dropped him, or, you know, most end up people dropping him, he started every single game and he's, you know, done well for himself and the Cubs. And that is Matt Shaw, projected with the, of all players that are 50% or less rostered in the main event 15-team style leagues, he's the second highest home run projection by PLV projections for the following week. The guy who has the most home runs projected that fits that criteria is Rhys Hoskins, who's also playing every single day in Cleveland. You know, in the heart of that order, not performing that great, but the fact that he's batting leadoff, cleanup pretty much every day for Cleveland, taking over any kind of RBI responsibilities that Chase DeLauter or Jose Ramirez might have had, could at least make him somebody that you want to pay attention to due to the added playing time and situation that he finds himself in that lineup.
Yep, absolutely. I love that because he's actually starting versus right-handed pitching with all these injuries in Cleveland's lineups. We talked about the other guys getting shuffled at the bottom, but he's been in there and in the cleanup spot on days when he would typically sit.
Right.
Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah.
It is a heavy right-handed week for Atlanta, so Dominic Smith is in play.
I am just trying to figure out why Matt Shaw didn't start his first 6 games back from the IL, and then he has started each of his last 5 in right field. I'm not questioning it. I'm happy to see it, especially since he has, like I said, he has been performing in that time, so that should lead to further opportunities. Doesn't have a home run in his return yet, but multiple multi-hit games in those starts, I actually don't think he's got no stolen bases or anything either, but a couple of triples, so he's got a couple of extra base hits in there as well. So we'll see him continue to go, and hopefully he'll knock out that first home run next week after you spend some money to pick him back up. not on Sunday. All right, so we got some power options out there that are readily available. Matt Shaw being available in about 2/3 of main event leagues and much more in the 15s. Reese Hoskins available in about 88% of 15s and 100% of your 12 teamers if you're desperate in that situation as well. And I think Peterson went up a little bit since we talked about him last. Yeah, you've got in here 75% roster in the main events. So still a quarter of those leagues. Double check them in your 15 teamers, but still readily available in your 12s at 90% availability. We talked about Jose Siri in the speed category, you know, just due to the fact that who else are they going to throw in center field in Anaheim? But who else is out there to score some runs and steal some bases, Kevin?
Yeah, well, we did leave this out of the news. Cooper Pratt gets the call in Milwaukee. He has been up since Tuesday. He has played every single day, already had 17 stolen bases in just 58 games at AAA this season. Another two at the major league level in just 4 games. So he is already off and running for Milwaukee. And it appears that, you know, when they signed him to his long-term deal several weeks ago, that made it clear that, yeah, this isn't a time manipulation thing anymore. He is signed. So when they call him up, he's going to play. They did call him up. He is playing, and he's running wild, Adam.
Yeah. I just needed more names in the speed category. That's why we left.
Absolutely. I've actually had trouble recently because early in the season, we were naming 3 or 4 guys, and it's a lot of those same guys with availability still. So we've been adding them to the list, almost like our ratios category with pitchers, but we have a new name here.
Mm-hmm. One name, or two names that PLV really likes for stolen bases next week. Also left them out of the news. Johnny DeLuca did return to Tampa Bay from his IL stint, started on Friday against the lefty in right field, batting third, did not start on Saturday against the righty. And so if I can stall long enough, Kevin, for you to look up to see what Tampa has going on for next week, who they're facing, if they happen to be facing a couple extra lefties, he could be an option for you especially in the top third of the order, could score some runs. He is projected for one and one fifth of a stolen base for next week by PLBot. So that's an option there. Victor Robles also projected for 1.2 stolen bases next week. Both of these guys are pretty much available everywhere, regardless of your league size.
Yeah, this had been a really strict platoon between Victor Mesa Jr. and Austin Slater in right field. This does appear to be a 1-for-1 with Austin Slater being DFA'd when Johnny DeLuca returned. So it does appear that he will play against every single left-handed starting pitcher. Maybe a righty here and there, but it does appear that they've been pretty happy with Victor Mesa Jr. in right field versus righties most days. And Tampa is set to face a left-handed starting pitcher, two of them this week. They have a 7-game week, and they're only facing one lefty the first half and one lefty the second half of the week. So probably not a great week for Johnny DeLuca, but definitely someone worth keeping an eye on for when Tampa has a stretch like they just recently had where they faced left-handed pitchers 6 out of 8 games.
Yeah. And then the other name I threw out there was Robles, Victor Robles. Been starting against righties for the last week plus. Didn't start on Saturday against the lefty. Did get the start on Friday against the lefty as well. But they do face 5 out of 6 righties all next week as well. So if he can get on some kind of run in playing pretty much every single day for next week, his one thing he could do for you is, you know, he can hit that projection for P.O. Bot saying get you that one or two stolen bases on the week.
Yeah, it's I'm really intrigued by what's going on with Robles here. Seattle does face 5 out of 6 righties this coming up week, but typically Robles is a short side platoon guy. This has been kind of a weird few days, worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like as you mentioned before this stretch, he had only started, you know, 3 of the last 12, 15 games, and they were, of course, all against lefty starters. And then he's getting all of these, and then he's getting sat against the lefty today.
Right.
I don't know. Seattle's going to, you know, do what they need to do, I guess. All right. Well, we've got some opportunity to keep an eye out for. And like I said before, there were all these interesting off days. And you mentioned it last week. It was probably, you know, had a lot to do with like the World Cup. And there were some weird off days because of, you know, stadiums having to be used or just, you know,
not parking lots.
Sharing parking lots. Yeah, exactly. But we've got a lot of teams with a 7-game workload next week. And once again, MLB did a good job. Nobody has 5 games. Everybody has either 6 or 7, but a lot of teams have 7, including Boston, the Yankees, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Detroit, Kansas City, Houston, Texas, Mets, Philadelphia, Washington, the Cubs, St. Louis, and Arizona all have a game every single day next week. Colorado is going to play 6. They will be splitting their time hosting the Boston Red Sox 4-3, and then they will be in Minnesota for 3 over the weekend. Cincinnati also splitting their time hosting Milwaukee in Cincinnati for 3, and then going to Pittsburgh over the weekend. And the Athletics will be away from both Vegas and West Sacramento for the entirety of the week, going to the opposite pitcher friendliness or hitter friendliness in San Francisco, and then going down the coast to Anaheim over the weekend. So with all that in mind, anything else, Kevin, who are you have your eye on to take advantage of whatever opportunities might arise?
All right. I need some help here, Adam, on for one of these guys, because this could be a really big jump in playing time, but it may not be so much. A couple of weeks ago, I was starting to wonder if Anthony Seigler was going to be the everyday second baseman, at least versus righties for your Boston Red Sox. He had gotten 2 starts in 5 games. The 3 he hadn't gotten were versus lefties. And it appeared that maybe this was going to be a thing. They sent him down that very next day.
Right.
And our good friend IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, began to play every single day once again. After Seigler had started in his place versus 2 consecutive righties, they were like, nah, it's IKF's job. Now IKF is on the IL. They recalled Seigler. They've only had 1. Today's the first game since he has been recalled. Not only is he in the lineup at second base, he's leading off. Now, I don't expect that to continue because they did give both Gasper and Rafael a day off today. What I have realized is Gasper and Rafael having the same day off is very rare, but it can happen because Nate Eaton is on the roster mainly to be the position player pitching if they need him. I think this is his first game that he started since being called up 2 weeks ago. But if you remember, for Kansas City, he can go out there and pump 90 when they need him to
pitch. Oh, yeah.
But what I'm getting at here, Monasterio did start 3 of the last 4 games versus righties, and now they have, and he hadn't been for quite some time. It had been IKF, and now he's not in there. Are we going to see Anthony Seigler get some run here? Because it appears that might be what we're seeing. And once again, I do not expect him in that leadoff spot. I would expect him to be in about that 7 spot where IKF had been, but it sure looks like he could get some everyday run.
It's like for the last couple seasons, Red Sox can't decide what they're going to do with second base, right? It's, no matter what option.
And Christian Campbell's not taking advantage at AAA right now.
Exactly. They ever since that experiment, it's like been a complete, you know, rotation of options at second base. You know, when we realized when, you know, Bregman would come on and was like, oh, well, we're just going to move Bregman over to second. That was all the talk when he signed. He's like, yeah, he'll just move to second base. Devers will play third. Obviously, that didn't happen. Campbell did not, you know, pan out the way that it was expected or hoped for after his call up, or when he made the opening day roster. And now we're just continuing to throw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall to see who sticks. Now, could Siegler change all that, at least in the time frame? If nothing else, because the options are starting to dwindle. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Do I expect it to happen right away? Absolutely not. Because with Monasterio there as well, with his flexibility, with his options, they have other guys who have played second base, but I don't expect them to move them from what they've been doing, obviously, right? With, you know, even Rafaela and even Durbin having some experience at the position in the past as well. So it seems as though, and Meyer as well, but obviously, you know, with the other injuries that the team has taken on with Story, and even infielder options like Nick Sogard and IKF, as you mentioned earlier, this kind of caused this whole reason why Siegler was called up in the first place. Yeah, I could see the two just splitting time at second base, Siegler and Monasterio, but Monasterio was getting most of those when he was starting. He was that short side of the platoon anyway. And so if they just go with a clean platoon situation, what you said at the very beginning will be the easiest path forward that I can see, where Siegler is getting the strong side of the platoon on a regular basis, just so they can have some form of consistency at the position. In the middle infield, they haven't had any really consistency all season long.
I was looking at that earlier as well. I was looking at this earlier as well, and it kind of appears to me that that may be why they went with IKF and only gave Siegler two games and then sent him back and went with IKF, because they were trying to get that consistency for Marcelo Meyer in the middle infield.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, having a consistent double play partner.
Sure, but I mean, IKF wasn't playing every day at second base either.
He did until the last couple of days, there for a little over a week just recently.
Sure.
When from the time they sent Siegler down, he did give Meyer actually missed a game himself with an injury. And other than that game, IKF was there at second base like eight straight. So yeah, that's what I was looking at earlier.
Yeah, that is interesting, except for that one. Yeah, he filled in for Meyer on that injury day, and then he randomly played third base.
So I'm wondering if this is something to make Meyer more comfortable as well.
Yeah, and that could be. I mean, we talk about this all the time. It's like you don't want to platoon shortstop if you can avoid it, and it's nice to have that double play partner on a regular basis, just so you can build up some kind of rhythm and some kind of rapport, and you know, feel comfortable out there as you're trying to, you know, turn those double plays. So Siegler is an interesting one. Again, another name that we didn't throw.
Maybe a wait and see. And he's not rostered anywhere, and I don't expect him to be a real popular ad this weekend, if at all. So maybe a keep an eye on, wait and see. We did briefly mention a guy similarly, wait and see, last weekend that I think is viable now and is getting the opportunity, and that is Gabriel Racones Jr. He's 8% rostered in 15 team main events, 0% in the online championships, and where to go? He's gotten off to a pretty decent start, already has a home run. Now he's not hitting for average yet, he's been in the lineup on a consistent basis. He doesn't hit for average and hasn't throughout his minor league career. What is interesting to me is both last season and at AAA, 18 home runs, 21 stolen bases. He hit 240 at AAA. He hit 240. But 18 home runs, 21 stolen bases. If you look at his projections, he rest of season, about 200 plate appearances, all the projections, six or seven home runs, six or seven stolen bases. He is projected to be a 2020 guy over a full season. Yes, these projections do give him a 200 teens projected batting average with him only hitting 240 at AAA. So definitely need a batting average cushion. Some of my teams, I actually have one, and it's just been complete random variance, right? For depending on injuries and who hit and who didn't. A couple of my teams, I really do have like a 4 or 5 percentage point cushion in batting average over the a group, not necessarily in first place, but ahead of the next bunch of people. Sure. In a league like that, I definitely would give Racones Jr. here a really close look, because it does appear like we could be looking at a 2020 guy with a low batting average. Unfortunate, the low batting average.
Sure. Another name that kind of stuck out, not only because of availability, if nothing else, Eli White seems to be getting the biggest bump in Atlanta from Ronald Acuna Jr. going on the IL, starting most games out in the outfield, mostly in right field, a little bit of left field as well. And, you know, taking advantage of that time to the best of his ability. And if he continues to get, it doesn't seem to be the days missed to be a platoon of any situation, but still with enough flexibility to play. He played, he moved over to center field in one game as well. So he's been playing all three outfield positions during Acuna's time off. So, you know, could be somebody worth throwing out there if you are desperate to add an outfielder to your waterfall bids. He's getting a lot more playing time and should for that at least the next week.
Yeah, I like it. He's filled in nicely for us in a pinch when we've needed him off the waiver wire multiple times in recent seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing okay. He has had a couple of 0-for games, but he did, you know, have the home run, a 3-for-4 game earlier in the week with the home run. Yep. So it's not as though he's going to throw offers out there for you every single week. So he's not going to be the first person on your waterfall bid, but we talked about it last week or the week before. When you need to, you know, scrimp and save, and you just got to get a warm body in your lineup, and you've got to throw in a bunch of $1, $2, $3, $4 bids, you know, just make sure Eli White is somewhere in there for you.
Yeah, and we briefly mentioned Nick Lofton when we were talking about the Kansas City injuries. If either Bobby Witt Jr. or Michael Garcia misses time, he will be the beneficiary. And absolutely, if both miss time, he could play every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good call. Von Grisham, also a name out there just because he did.
Return. Oh, yeah, he just came back this week as well. Yep.
And so he'll be playing. I think he's only missed one start since coming back.
Yeah,
so
I think 4 out of 5, something like that.
So he should continue to see that kind of pattern moving forward as well. All right, well, we got to hit up the pitchers now, Kevin, but we're going to do that after this break. All right, Kai, I alluded to it earlier. I think I outright said it. Pickings are slim, and they have been most of the month. If you listen to Nick and Eno, or Nick and his very special guest, Eno Saris, on The Craft this past week, they go into it. The swoons of streaming throughout the course of the season. We are in that big, 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 big drop period in mid-June. It does get better at some point, usually a little after the, for what Nick was saying, after the All-Star break, as teams start feeling a little bit more comfortable calling guys up. We're past the Super 2 thing, so that's no longer an issue. But we're still seeing a bunch of injuries. We're still seeing a lot of guys, just especially in your no IL leagues. It makes it that much harder, right? Because you got to hold on to the guys you think are going to come back soon enough where they're going to be valuable, but you still need to fill their active roster spots with guys who are actually going to perform. Problem is everybody else is doing that too, and there's no more options. So, Kevin, what options do we have?
All right. if we're lucky, in 15 teamers. And if we're lucky,
that's a big one.
Yep. Because Shane Bieber's coming back this week, has a two-step. I am not a huge Shane Bieber guy, but when one of the two is Texas, that's going to make me comfortable. And Houston, been up and down early in the year. We were scared of them. Then they cooled off and they kind of up and down recently. So, yeah, definitely interested in Shane Bieber. The problem is he's 80% rostered in 15s, 60% even in 12s. Things get much better in 12s with some other options, but they get worse in the 15s. Eric Lauer, right? He's been pretty good recently in LA, of course, with that lineup behind him. I'll take the chances with him, but he's 97% in 15s, only 14% 12s. I really thought that there might be more availability for Andre Pallante, St. Louis. He is available in 70% of online championships, but he's 98% rostered in the main event. He has a really nice matchups this week. He gets Arizona and Miami, both in St. Louis. I do get a little more worried about St. Louis in the middle of the summer when it's hot and humid in the Midwest. But those being home games should be to his advantage as well. Another guy, and he's much more rostered in 12s as well. And it's not as much this week. This week, I would start him against Cleveland with all those injuries we talked about. And Cleveland was already a lineup we weren't worried about. Cleveland now is a lineup I'm seeking to start pitching against, with arguably three of their five best hitters out of the lineup, right? And that's Sean Burke for the White Sox. Gets them this week. He's 97% rostered in 15s, but only 63 in 12s. And here's the problem, Adam. You talked about all these problems we have with finding pitching. So many people are looking ahead a couple of weeks,
right?
Because this is a great two-step in a couple of weeks at Baltimore, at Cleveland, right? Another one like that, Peter Lambert, 98% rostered in 15s, and he's at Toronto this week, but next week he gets Minnesota and Tampa, both at home, 66% rostered in 12s. So things are even limited when we're looking ahead 2 weeks, but that's to the point we're at. If everybody else is doing it, then we have to as well.
Right. I was looking ahead. I mean, again, another piece of news that we left out. Tyler Molle is expected to come back for San Francisco. He should start on Saturday at home against the Athletics. That seems fine, right? That seems okay. That lines him up for a two-start the following week, except it's at Arizona and then at Colorado. Obviously, just the Colorado one alone is not something you want to worry about. Never mind Molle coming back from the IL and showing, you know, got to see what he's going to do anyway. Probably willing to, you know, throw a couple bucks at him to stream him this week. But it's like the old adage. It's like, if you're not going to start him in a two start, are you even going to hold on to him? Probably not. It's probably a one-time thing. Kyle Leahy should, I believe, line up for a two start this week as well for St. Louis. He is PL Bot's choice when it comes to wins and strikeouts, just due to the two start situation that he has in front of him. Those two starts should come against Arizona and Miami, so not a bad pairing of offenses to take advantage of that, and that's going to be at home for both of those starts as well. So still readily available in over 2/3 of leagues in 15 teamers, and available 100% across the board in your 12 teamers. That is Kyle Leahy.
If you are of the opinion that many are, that we will see Mick Abel return next weekend, he gets Rocky Road for that return. If that is the case, if it's not him, then depending on how he fares versus Arizona tomorrow, I might be interested in Mike Paredes for that start for Minnesota versus the Rockies.
I did see a report that unfortunately Mick Abel did have a setback.
That is my parade. Friday,
he will not return from the IL this coming week. And he'll have another MRA when the team returns home. Dan Hayes reported that over on Blue Sky. So, yeah, well, that won't be the thing that, you know, you look for. It's like, what is why we can't have nice things.
Well, Mick, then Mike Paredes is this week's Javier Assad. He gets the same start that Assad got for us last week.
There you go.
And Assad does still have some availability and appears we'll get one more start this week as well. There's another option.
There you go. All right. Well, we got some volume options here that usually comes at the behest of losing out on your ratio. So, Kevin, we gotta shore up those ratios, pair them, handcuff them with somebody else. Who are you adding into the rotation of ratio helpers this week?
Some of the guys that in the off season and then in the first third to half of this season that we either speculated may get save chances or did for a short period of time are performing very well now that they are not getting those ninth inning opportunities that we wished maybe they were. Jacob Junis, his ratios have been really great in recent outings. He's available now. We realize those three saves in 1 week were the only three he's going to get all year, probably.
Sure.
But so he's an option. And in St. Louis, Matt Svensson is pitching very well right now, not getting the save opportunities that many prior to the season thought he might. O'Brien's just been that good recently. As far as I've looked, I haven't looked over the past couple of games, but last I looked, O'Brien was just that good this year so far. But Svensson has been very good recently as well, so we can add him to our list. St. Louis, a heavy week, so hopefully three or four innings, not just one or two.
Yeah, nice to obviously get that timing down right so you can get as many innings out of these guys as possible to make the biggest impact. So hopefully we can get them on the mound as many outs as possible. All right. Well, speaking of saves, Kevin, situations abound or not abound really. But what, any bullpens out there that you're keeping an eye out for save opportunities specifically?
Well, there's things that are not settled. There's situations I don't really want to mess with that much. And The Athletics should be in that category for me. I should just quit worrying about them. I think we've brought up an Athletics reliever every show this season, probably. Sure. But I really wanted to bring this guy up in the previous category in the ratios. Unfortunately, I think he's gonna have a little bit of cost to him because he is considered to be in the save mix for the Athletics now, and that's Elvis Alvarado, but he's been amazing in recent weeks.
Yeah, definitely a name that has been jumping up, you know, different posts and different, you know, communications. I've seen his name jumping around quite a bit throughout the Discord. Again, another piece of news that we left out here. Ryan Helsley did return to Baltimore, got his first save opportunity just yesterday on Friday, did blow it, got the loss. But we'll see. I mean, he threw nine pitches on Wednesday and it wasn't any situation worth mentioning, just to get him back in the mix. But once he did get that opportunity, did not fare that well. So who's to say that, you know, he gets thrown into the fire, right away. So we'll see how that works itself out in Baltimore. I do expect he'll be fine. But it is a situation obviously worth monitoring, and maybe you don't throw your Rico Garcias down the down in your drop bin, this weekend. Yeah, I mean, any concerns about Andres Munoz in Seattle after last weekend should be completely wiped away. He got two saves this week. All my money I spent on Jose Ferrer is for naught this past weekend. I'll probably hold on to him for a little bit longer just to see how that worked out, but he hasn't really done anything for me whatsoever. He hasn't pitched all week. That is Ferrer for Seattle, but Munoz got two saves there. Obviously, Matt Brash not an option, being on the IL for some time as well. Yeah, I mean, it's just as bad as starting pitching is, we're not at a point right now where there's a lot of flux in the top end of bullpens, at least not ones where we can readily speculate on the obvious setup guy either. It would appear. And so you've got to be playing some, you know, playing a little bit of darts in this situation to, you know, hopefully catch some gold at some point in the next couple
and
weeks.
Several teams getting very few save opportunities recently to even be able to try to start to put the puzzle together.
Yep. Yeah. All week. Yeah. Just scanning through this. Philadelphia hasn't even had a save all week. The White Sox, as good as they've been playing, are in limited. I saw a tweet. I apologize. I can't give the credit because I don't have it up. But somebody pointed out that the Angels have only had three save opportunities since mid April or something, some crazy stat like that. So yeah, to your point, not a lot of saves going around. Though I did hear, oh man, who was it? Somebody got a 4 or 3 inning save the other day, and it was his first save of his career. And all I could think about, Kevin, was you tracking how many pitchers have recorded a save this season. And it just went up at least one more after that happened.
The last number I heard was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was over, I want to say it was well over 110 at the time. Mm-hmm. We're running out of guys
that's the thing.
Are eligible to get a save that don't have one yet. So, right.
Oh man, now I'm just scanning through. It wasn't Vestia. That was a lot of pitches though. But yeah, it was interesting to hear that one. Just be like, I thought the exact same thing. It's like, how many more guys are out there that can qualify for their first save of the season? Even Yarbrough got a save earlier this week.
Kirby Yates is considered the guy in Anaheim again. I'm not sure why, but yeah, sure. He is considered the guy, and he's available in over half of online championships. So there's some guys out there, but do we want them? That's right, the problem.
That's the
unfortunately, we have to want them in some places. Yeah. That's the unfortunate
thing. It was like my comment about where I've got Ermy Clement, I need him. Yeah. It's like where I have Kirby Yates, I probably need him.
Yes.
Situations. All right. Well, we've got lots of pitchers to consider there as well. But now we get an opportunity to talk about anything you want, Kevin, with your wild card selection. And we're going to do that right after this break. All right, that's it. No more breaks. Kevin, get right into it with your wild card selection for the week. Could be a stash, could be an IL, could be any random player that didn't fit into any of the categories. Who you got?
They're all stashes.
Yeah.
None of them are available in NFBC formats, I should say. Sure. Let me make that clear. I don't think, because two of these guys are 27-year-old guys that we've seen plenty in Major League Baseball, and they're both having really good seasons at Triple A. Well, they should be. They're 27 years old, but they're guys we may see at some point. They're playing that well. Jack Sawinski, loved him in Pittsburgh. He is now in the Dodgers organization and at Triple A, hitting .289 with 17 home runs on the season. With the injuries, I know they have Teoscar Hernandez is covered right now. We're seeing Ryan Ward, and things are going well. We may see Jack Sawinski at some point, so just keep an eye on that. He has been doing well at AAA. The other guy in the same, somewhat similar situation, Michael Toglia, also 27 years old in the Cincinnati organization at AAA. He has 18 home runs on the season. He's hitting 260, which isn't great at AAA, but it's pretty darn good for Michael Toglia. So another guy to keep an eye on. The guy I really want to talk about, and I've wanted to talk about this guy all season, but he was back at AA. He's now been at AAA for a few games. I do not believe he's on the 40-man yet, but he has just been destroying it all season. Manuel Pena in the Arizona organization. He now has 26 home runs already this season, who Kyle Schwarber just passed today with his three home run game. That's how amazing of a season he's having in the home run department, over 60 RBI and hitting 310 while doing it. Yes, just four or five games at AAA, but the way he's playing this season, and he is 22 years old, he may not spend much time at AAA.
Yeah, I mean, we just
destroyed AA.
We let off the show with all the moves that are that Arizona is having to go through, and you know they did make room for him by sending Luis Urias to Toronto. I guess maybe I don't know that I'm kind of forcing a square peg into a round hole with that one, but with the way this Arizona season is going as well, it's like we're past the Super 2. Maybe just get a little bit of extra seasoning at AAA. And like you said, if he continues to do in AAA what he did in AA, Arizona, where's Arizona's AAA? That's got to be.
He hit all 26 of those home runs at AA. And here's the thing. He's another one of these guys, like several of these guys that we've talked about recently. Jacob Gonzalez was one that's really coming into his power. Mm-hmm. His FanGraphs prospect numbers are back from 2022 when he was 18 years old. And he was at the time, 2022, current 25, future 55 in game power. And we're seeing that right now, just like with Jacob Gonzalez and a couple of other guys we've talked about this season. 14 home runs in 470 plate appearances last season, now in his age 22 season, almost doubling the amount of home runs and almost half the number of plate appearances, right? We're seeing that huge jump coming into his game power.
Yeah. Hasn't hit the home run yet in his four games in AAA, but has multiple multi-hit appearances in that time frame. You think he's been playing just first? Since moving up, he's only had the four starts, the four games, DH twice, first base in the other two, but played a lot of outfield, a lot of a little bit of first base. Do you expect this to be the case for Pena moving forward, like to stay at the first base position, or do you think they'll move him around to keep that eligibility?
I think they'll do what they need to do to get him in the lineup when they think he's ready.
Fair enough. So it's like sometimes you see guys move around and then like, we're going to have them play a different position once they get called up because that's the avenue that makes the most sense for the major league team. Right. I don't necessarily know that that's the case for Arizona first base being the number one position that they need. Outfield also probably not the number one position. So I think you're probably right on that one. All right. Well, that's a good one because it does seem like he's on a team that, you know, has a little bit more mobility as far as like, I mean, they just sent down their top prospect earlier. Was it last week or maybe at the end of the week prior as well? So they could be moving some guys around in general just to kind of see what they have going on throughout the rest of the summer. All right. Well, Kevin, that's going to do it for recommendations or guys that we want to keep an eye on for. We got the holiday tomorrow, or as you're listening to us, it's today. So, you know, we could very easily give the advice of like, you know, pay attention, even though you got other things going on. But what else do you have up your sleeve as far as like what we should be doing to, you know, put our best foot forward for our fantasy lineups?
Kind of along those lines, and you brought it up kind of like with Nick Pollock talking about the pitching staffs and stuff. You know, we often talk about, you know, the the long days of summer and such, and this game that we love does become a grind. And we typically, you know, talk about August after the trade deadline, we're pushing for playoffs and things, and we've been going for 4 or 5 months. But this last couple of weeks before we're approaching the All-Star break, like you were talking with the pitching staffs, we're not seeing a lot. The changes we do see bring bad news with injuries. We're seeing things, and the grind really does take over. So just remember, we're having fun. We're having fun. And then I noticed some things. I didn't want to put them – they didn't affect us because they're guys that play on an everyday basis. But we've talked about this multiple times. We've talked about it in terms of playing time. We've talked about it in terms of performance and lineup position as well. Guys get moved around in lineups. Brian Rocchio is universally rostered. He's having a surprisingly very steady, at least in 15s, he's heavily rostered. Very, very steady season. He's valuable to us, not just valuable to the Cleveland Guardians. He's got some fantasy value this season, and it just took a huge bump as he, over the past 5 games now versus righties and lefties, multiple of each, is hitting third in the lineup, no longer ninth. These are the things we have to notice before our own teams. He's a bench, a backup middle infielder on a lot of our teams, and now he should be in our starting lineup. So keep keeping tabs on every single little thing and not assuming that everything is as it was a couple of weeks ago, just like other in other ways that we have talked about this season.
One way that I've been guilty on in the past of taking for granted where the playing time was of somebody, especially on a younger player that I'm like, I was really excited to bring in. He got into my lineup in the NFBC. They do a really good job of labeling guys that are on the IL. They do not label when somebody gets dropped down. Yahoo,
there's no red on there when a guy goes back.
You don't know unless you're doing what you're talking about and you're checking the lineup, you're checking the different situations, the playing times, and you're breaking that down. And, you know, one that I, as we were just talking throughout the course of today, that I, you know, just it just kind of clicked. Pretty sure he's on my bench anyway, so I don't have to. I'm not too worried about it. Is in Tampa Bay. They did send down. Oh man, where's the lineup? No! I'm thinking of a different, completely different player. Oh, good. This is the point. You're paying attention to lineups, and so that you're double checking and doing all the things you're supposed to be doing. Just not taking for granted guys that are, not around anymore. Oh, Johnny Pareda. That's what I was thinking about. In Seattle. Excuse me. I had picked him up in a place or two when I needed a catcher, and now he's not on the team anymore.
Yeah, probably came back. Yeah. Another similarly, but a little different, something that you bring up all the time, always check. It comes up when there's elite players that the injury doesn't end up being as bad as we think. Adam, you and I are in a 15 team league that Garrett Crochet is available on waivers this weekend. We are in one of the leagues, one of the few where he was dropped, right? Sure. And because it is a listener league, the other 13 players in the league may be listening as well. But we have Garrett Crochet bidding going on in a league this weekend, Adam. And we're not the only one.
He's such an interesting one just because we've talked about him like every other week, just because it just seems like everything keeps going wrong in his road back, and you get to a point where you're like, how many pieces of bad news do you need to have before you're like, fine, let this be somebody else's problem? And obviously that happened in this league last week, or maybe even the week before, but I doubt it. I'm pretty sure he got dropped last week. You know what, when you do that, when you make that decision, you can also be the one to bid on him the following week as well. So,
and I made that decision early when Luis Robert Jr. got hurt early last season, and I dropped him immediately, and he came back much more quickly than we anticipated, and I was upset. I wasn't able to get him back. I got outbid when I tried, and then he performed horribly, and it was a blessing in disguise.
There you go.
So I do understand making the premature drops, depending on the league, especially if you really, really need the room. And yeah, sometimes it's a frustration thing as well. I'm done dealing with him, but my main point is our league isn't going to be the only one that he's available in this weekend. That was a move that was made in a handful of places. Not a lot, but a handful. Go check, like you like to say.
Got to go check. Gotcha. All right. Well, with that note and everything else that we talked about, that's going to wrap it up for episode 259 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.